Welcome to the July 4th edition of Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news, even if the preoccupation today includes parades, barbecues, outdoor activities, and fireworks here in mid-Missouri. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. On the 226th anniversary of our nation's establishment, it is fitting to examine how this country is viewed by the rest of the world on important issues. The United States has grown in these 2 1/4 centuries from a brash outpost of the world's greatest 18th century empire into the only superpower in a world today without great empires. But the President of the United States is arguably more powerful than any emperor who ever existed, and the country he leads is supreme over all world powers from ancient Greece and Rome through modern times. Two issues in the news today raise doubts about America's world leadership. One is the financial crisis rocking this country, the collapse of Enron, WorldCom, Global Crossings, even the French-led firm Vivendi Universal, which has a strong presence in the United States. It's all had an impact on the rest of the world. And worldwide peacekeeping operations are threatened by the United States' refusal to take part in the International Criminal Court. That's another problem casting doubt on American leadership. To shed light on how America is viewed from afar these days, we have as guests in Sarajevo, Bosnia, Sead Numanovic, an investigative reporter for the newspaper Devnia Vas. That means Daily Voice. In The Hague, Netherlands, Sebastian Gottlieb of Radio Netherlands. In New York, Hiroyuki Oshima, correspondent for the Japanese television network NHK. And in Mexico City, Jose Lopez Zamoruno, North American editor of Notimex, Mexico's leading news agency. Greetings to all of you on this 4th of July. Let's start with the International Criminal Court issue, and let's start in Sarajevo. Sead, the United States is one of only two major countries, the other being China, that has refused to ratify the new criminal court. The United States is afraid that for political reasons, prosecutors will go after Americans as potential war criminals. And as a result, it has threatened to pull out of the peacekeeping operation in your country. How serious a problem is this for Bosnia and Herzegovina?
It appears to be a quite serious problem for Bosnia. You know, UN are engaged in a series of the activities in this country, from the police reconstruction to the reconstruction of the courts, who are working in the heritage of the communist mentality and system, so they are very insufficient for the necessities of the people. So the pull out of the Americans from the UN here would severely damage activities of the international community in Bosnia, together with the domestic people who are for reforms in this country. The refusal of the United States to ratify the ICC, first of all, and then suspend peacekeeping operations here, is seen here as way too much from the Americans. We see America as an example of democracy and liberty, and the current American leadership is not acting in accordance with that. America now is not an example for the freedom and justice. It's an example for domination. Americans cannot be above the law. And there is no one who press charges against Americans anywhere in the world, regardless of some mistakes or collateral damages. So I don't understand behavior of administration now.
Well, Sead, let me ask you a question. If the United States is, as you say it is, if it places itself above the law, if it refuses any kind of authority above it, why do you want the United States involved in your country?
Because the United States so far proved as an ally of Bosnia and a good friend of Bosnia, and assistance of America in a political term is essential. You know, in Dayton, Ohio, has been peace agreement forged, and that's how we ended a war in this country. With help of Americans, we managed to preserve stability of this country, and we are counting on America, as everybody in Europe or in the world, as a leading good example. It's a responsibility as well as an honor.
Sebastian Gottlieb, you hear what Siad says about how in his country they are counting on the United States as a leading good example. Is the United States viewed as a leading good example in Western Europe these days?
Yes, you can say so. We don't seem able to end the war in former Yugoslavia without the Americans. So apparently we need them.
Yeah, but what about the refusal of the United States to join this new international criminal court? How is that going down?
Well, the understanding is not quite big here. You could say the fear for foreign jurisdiction is quite overdone. Actually, we don't understand why the Americans are so opposed to this international court, because they've always been an initiator from the end of Second World War. They were always one of the initiators to erect a tribunal to try war criminals. So it's a bit strange to see they back out now, and actually we don't understand why, because it seems mostly a quite emotional argument to stop the support for the ICC, because the way I see it, actually there is only a theoretical chance that Americans will be tried by the ICC, but in practice it will never happen. Suppose there is one American who is prosecuted because of war crimes in Bosnia, then it would be possible to try this American military in front of the ICC, but the ICC is additional law. That means that the state of that the United States have to try their own citizen first before the ICC gets in power. And the ICC is erected only to try war criminals if the national states can't or won't try them themselves. So in practice, it will never happen that Americans will be tried by the ICC, because I'm sure they will be tried by the American system itself.
If that is the case, why does the United States say that it is afraid that Americans will be brought before the court first? And what the Bush administration says, and indeed not only the Bush administration, but I think what most Americans feel, is that the court will try to usurp the powers of the United States. Is there language in the treaty forbidding that?
Not forbidding, but there are all kinds of checks and balances that it won't happen, because the fear of the ICC itself is that it will become a political institute. That's the last thing they would like to happen. So there are a lot of checks to prevent the ICC from becoming a political institute. For instance, the Security Council of the United Nations is able to stop investigation by the ICC for at least 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Siad, in Bosnia these days there are, 15,000 foreign troops? And a very small number of them are Americans. How many Americans are there?
Actually, there is about 18,000 S-Force, Stabilization Forces, multinational forces, peacekeepers, mm-hmm. and they are running under the command of NATO. And within these 18,000 is about 2,100 Americans. And that's not at stake. What is at stake is a UN mandate in International Police Task Force, where it's about 1,500 policemen and only 46 Americans in it.
So the issue here is over 46 Americans only.
Now, yes, but actually in total, in the next month, is about 700 Americans all over the world in the different peacekeeping missions from Bosnia to East Timor and Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm. And it is only these UN forces that would potentially be subject to the International Criminal Court?
Yes, that's what I understood.
Okay. Now, last night here in the United States in New York, the United Nations Security Council voted to extend until the 15th of July the peacekeeping activities with the United States involved, and potentially the United States would be under the ICC, and the United States went along with that. Siad, do you think that a compromise can be worked out so that the United States will continue to go along with it outside of ICC jurisdiction?
Well, I don't think there is a space for compromise in that manner. On the one hand, the United States wants blanket immunity for its peacekeepers all over the world. And the other hand, all countries in the world are opposing to it. So Americans are alone. And as far as I know, there is only one example in the last 20 years that Americans were, let's say, so isolated. And I don't think because of this whole range of activities in the States, including that the Congress passed the law, basically against the ICC, that a compromise is going to be reached. I don't see what is the way out, to be honest with you.
So then you think that the United States is going to withdraw from this UN police building operation?
I think this is just one small piece of the longer and larger conflict between U.S. and U.N. It's a long history of the conflicts, and it's now, let's say, the strongest one. I was told in New York that this is actually was excuse for Americans to try finally to take over U.N.
Mr. Haruki Oshima, you're closest to the UN of anybody on our panel today. What do you think is going to happen there? Will a compromise be reached?
Well, since I'm a professional for economy, I have a slightest idea about this issue.
Uh-huh. Okay, then excuse me for putting you on the spot. Let's take a break now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie. We'll be right back to talk about the economy. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or here in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. Mr. Oshima and Mr. Zamora in Mexico City, we spent the first part of the program talking about the International Criminal Court. Let's move on now to the economic situation in this country. There appears to be some serious amount of dishonesty in the way the United States has been operating its financial markets and in the way some of the major companies on the stock exchanges this year have been dealing with their earnings and expenses. What is the impact of what's going on in the banking centers of the United States in your countries? Mr. Zamoruno, you go first.
Yes, hi. Well, for example, in the case of the WorldCom scandal, during the day after this story broke, the Mexican Bolsa lost the biggest loss for a day in the whole year, which was about 3%. It later came up back up after the size of the dimension of the problem was more clear. But of course, there was a lot of concern initially from the investors here about what kind of impact this might have on Mexico. Of course, there was a concern that to the extent that the bankruptcy of WorldCom, for example, or some other companies might have an impact on the growth of the U.S. economy, this, of course, will have an effect on the growth of the Mexican economy. We have a saying here that when the U.S. economy sneezes, we get the flu. So we're pretty aware about the consequences of a recession in the U.S. for 2001 and then what happened after September 11 and how this had an impact on the growth of the U.S., of the Mexican economy. So I think there was a concern in that regard. Also, there was an analysis, I'd say, of a lot of self-searching here as to how the Mexican companies are prepared, you know, to deal with these kind of issues. And there was a very interesting survey done here by a local company that shows that 90% of medium and small companies in Mexico don't have any kind of mechanism to identify or manage any kind of risk or identify any kind of ethical problem. So I think there was an impact in the markets, and also there's an impact on the operation of the companies.
Does that mean that Mexico may be learning something from what's going on in the United States, and that regulatory systems will be improved in Mexico as a result?
Well, what I've seen here is that, for example, the Bolsa Mexicana de Valores, the Mexican stock exchange, is saying that they offered to the investors a lot of guarantees to minimize that kind of risk. Of course, I'm not really an expert on that specific issue, but I think that there's a lot of self-searching in terms of being able to try to identify which are those areas that are now being exposed in the U.S. as problematic and try to fix them probably within the means of the regulatory system in Mexico.
Mr. Oshima, I know that you are in New York, but what can you tell us about how all of this is being treated in Japan?
Well, I'd like to explain that there are approximately two repercussions. One is Tokyo stock market. Tokyo stock market got a very bad influence from New York stock market because of the dishonesty of accounting issue. And so in that context, many Japanese, particularly investors, are deeply concerning about this issue. And the other impact is, as you know, Japan has been trying to reform our economic system from our so-called colony economic system to global economic system. And so reform of Japanese economic system is, in short, means that to adjust to the economic system of the United States. And so the American, North American economic system is, in a sense, a goal for our economic system and for our reforming our economic system.
Yeah.
And so in that context, we have a very strange feeling about today's accounting system. So,
yeah, these big accounting firms, Arthur Andersen, Deloitte Touche, the others.
Not only audit firm, but, you know, whole system. I mean, I would say American capitalism.
Right, but what I wanted to ask you, these big firms right now operate, I'm sure, in your country, Mr. Oshima, and certainly in Mexico as well. Are these firms still being viewed as good as they were before in your countries?
Well, frankly speaking, there are no other choice except five major audit companies.
And the five major audit companies are all American companies.
Yeah.
You say, Mr. Oshima, you say that the whole system of capitalism is now under question. What is the implication of that in Japan? Does that mean that Japan might...
As I tried to say, Japan is trying to reform our system and is, I mean, aiming to adjust American capitalism. But if American capitalism has something wrong, well, we are sort of missing the goal. So we don't know what to do. So that's a major problem.
Yeah. Mr. Zamoruno, is that a problem in Mexico these days also? Is there a problem?
Yes, indeed. Of course, what we're seeing here is that, of course, because of this incident, many companies are being recommended, you know, to take a closer look at what their accounting companies do. For example, there's a lot of recommendations to review the objectives of the internal audits as opposed to what happened before. There's also a recommendation to hire external experts, you know, to evaluate, to assess the company risk, to analyze data to prevent any kind of frauds. And of course, the regulatory bodies, as you asked me before, are doing a little bit more, by putting more emphasis to implement, to put in place all these better corporate practices issues that probably were not in the front burner before these scandals broke in the U.S. So yes, I think there's a more awareness about what impact these accounting companies do, and to play a more active role on the companies to check out what they do and how they behave in their own accounting practices.
Yeah, Sebastian Gottlieb, are you still with us? Tell us a little bit about how all of this financial scandal in the United States is being viewed in Europe and what the impact might be on the European economy.
Well, the way I understand is that the organization of the capitalism in Europe or in Holland and United States is a bit different. The way we see it is that the stockholders in the United States have all the power. It seems that all the attention is aimed and focused to please the stockholders. And you could say that in Holland or in Europe, the whole company as a whole is being seen more. And it's not only the stockholders who count.
You know, in this country, it is the stockholders who are really bearing the burden of this thing. These stocks were very high-priced stocks until just a few months ago, and now they're selling for pennies each, many of them.
Yes, but you could say the pressure to please the stockholders is too big in the United States, and that's why the accountancy are so in a difficult position, because there's a lot of pressure on them to provide better figures to please the stockholders. It seems that the only attention is to please the stockholders, and you could probably say that in Europe the attention is also more to the company as a whole.
Vivendi is a French company, really, and yet it has fallen down the same hole as American-led companies.
Yes, well, you can't generalize it, but if you see it as in a big issue, you could say that maybe that is the difference between Europe and United States. It's the position of the stockholders.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mr. Oshima, what about stockholders in Japan? Are they a primary factor in decisions made by large Japanese companies?
Well, as you know, the goal of many U.S. companies are trying to get a better earning for the next quarter, but on the contrary, many Japanese companies are aiming for another goals. I mean, you know, as a going concern, a corporation, we tend to think that corporation, of course, should make profit, but also should contribute to the local economy, contribute to the workers, contribute to the stockholders, you know, so we have several goals. Mm-hmm. And so that difference has something to do with this issue.
Yeah. A few years ago, when the Japanese economy was roaring along, there was a lot of Japanese investment in the United States. How do Japanese feel about investing in this country now?
Well, since we lost our target to invest domestically, we need to go out, I mean, in a sense. So Dala Zone is one of the best place to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And well, since the anxiety for dishonesty of accounting system, well, I think many Japanese investors tend to hesitate to invest because they don't know what to invest under such a circumstance.
Yeah. Mr. Zamoruno, Mexico has put a large part of its economic progress into the North American Free Trade Association. Is there any concern about that now as a result of what's going on in this country?
Well, of course, there is, to the extent that 90% of each peso that is, that comes to the, or each dollar that comes to this country comes from the U.S., and that the exports to the U.S. have decreased at least 5% since these years as compared to the previous year. So there's always some concerns about the health of the U.S. economy. But it's also true that Mexico has been diversifying its economy also to other continents. The president's now, for example, touring Brazil and Argentina. We have several trade agreements also with those countries in Central America, South America. Also, he's looking, the Mexican government is looking towards Europe. So to the extent that there's a recognition of a lot of interdependence with the U.S. economy, there's also been a strategy to try to diversify to our other places. But of course, there's always a lot of interest to try to do whatever the Mexico economy can, you know, to help the U.S. economy recover, so that because there's this recognition that our economic health is mutual.
Okay, we are out of time. I'm sorry this program has gone so quickly. Our guests today have been Siad Numanovic in Sarajevo, Sebastian Gottlieb in The Hague, Netherlands, Hiroyuki Oshima in New York City, he is with NHK of Japan, and Jose Lopez Zamoruno in Mexico City. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer, Mariana De Mayo. For all, I'm Stuart Laurie, and from all of us, a happy 4th of July throughout the country. Global Journalist will be back next week.